You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey everyone, welcome to a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm your host, Luke Sand. Today is Thursday, February 23rd, 2017. It's our second to last episode of the week, although we will be back tomorrow with our final episode of the week, talking a little bit about what happened in tonight's game between the Clippers and the Dallas Mavericks, and then getting ready for the Clippers against the Utah Jazz on Saturday, which is arguably going to be the biggest game of the regular season for both teams, and could just come down to determining who has home court advantage in an eventual first-round matchup between these two teams. So we're definitely going to get into it on that game a little bit. And then I also think that that game kind of marks a turning point for both teams into the back stretch of the season. For each team, it's the ninth to last game. They'll have eight more games after Saturday. And, you know, that's a kind of small sample size, enough to the point where one or two tricky scheduling games can really swing the entire season sort of in the back stretch. So, you know, it's going to be, it's definitely going to be an interesting window, especially with what's happening with the other Western teams during that time. Really, the only Western team that is stable right now is the Houston Rockets. They aren't passing anyone, and no one's passing them. They're at three. Golden State and San Antonio are still grappling for positioning between the one and two seeds. The Clippers, Jazz, Grizzlies, and Thunder are all very fluid from four through seven. And then the Denver Nuggets are trying to stave off late season runs by the Portland Trailblazers and Dallas Mavericks for the eight seed. So even, you know, at this point in the season, a lot is still up in the air, except for Houston at three. But a lot of these other teams are making pushes, which are going to be very interesting. And so today's episode, which I think will be somewhat brief, I just want to discuss a couple of things from the last week or so that I haven't gotten a chance to talk about yet. As you know, we missed a few episodes because I got a little crazy busy in the last week. And so, you know, when we came back in yesterday's episode, I talked about the three games that the Clippers won easily while I was gone: Cleveland, New York, and the Lakers. But I missed a couple things. You know, I didn't have time to address everything. So there's a couple points that I want to make on that front. And then obviously we'll do, you know, like a kind of update on what's going on in the West based on yesterday's games and a look at tonight's games. And then we might talk a little bit about this Dallas Mavericks game, but not too much. So first, the two points that I wanted to make from the last week that I kind of didn't get to in the last episode are regarding Omri Caspi and Paul Pierce. So they're, in a sense, related, but not really. The Clippers missed out on Omri Caspi. He signed with the Minnesota Timberwolves. It seems like a really weird choice to me, but the best I can imagine is that the Timberwolves offered Caspi a lot of minutes, and Omri Caspi, being a 28-year-old NBA veteran who has never really had a big contract before and is going to be a free agent this summer anyway, he kind of thought to himself, where can I go that is going to give me the best chance to audition for this summer to try to get a nice, stable, long-term contract? For him, that place was Minnesota. And, you know, to be fair, he's only 28 years old. It's not like he's some ring-chasing veteran. And the Clippers wouldn't have been able to offer him a huge guaranteed role. Sure, it's possible he would have ended up being a big-time player at small forward for them. But it's also possible that he would have ended up playing next to no small forward at all, because Luke Mbamute has really earned minutes of that position. And then the Clippers have so many guards stuck in three-guard lineups that are all deeply entrenched in the rotation. So the safest bet would have put him at the backup power forward, where there just aren't a lot of minutes once the rotation tightens up and Blake Griffin starts playing 40 minutes a night. So, you know, the Clippers shot their shot. They went after him, and I don't blame them for not getting him if that was really his priority. And, you know, hopefully things work out for him in Minnesota, because Omri Caspi is a guy who I've kind of always liked his game, so I definitely like to see that work out for him. The other thing I wanted to talk about was Paul Pierce's kind of recent return to the rotation. In the Clippers' last four games, starting last Thursday against Denver, Paul Pierce has played an average of 12 minutes a night. Normally, actually, slightly over that. The Lakers game was just such a blowout that I don't think he played in the second half. I think Doc already had started going to, like, the third string guys. But what's interesting is that he actually hasn't played that horribly. Now, a lot of it might be because the Clippers had, you know, their three best, you know, three of the best games of the year were the last three games, or at least three of the most dominant wins. So everyone kind of looked good, you know, like a high tide raises all ships. But it's at least worth noting that he hasn't looked horrible. You know, defensively, he doesn't move well, but he hasn't been as bad as maybe how we've seen him be in the last 2 years. And offensively, you know, he's been okay. He hasn't taken a lot of shots, and one of his big problems was not that he was super inefficient, although he was inefficient, but that he shot at such a high rate. And now we're seeing him, like, against the Lakers, no shots in 7 minutes. Against the Knicks, two shots in 11 minutes. Against the Cavaliers, three shots in 14 minutes. So he's not out there chucking up, you know, a three-pointer every minute that he's on the floor. His worst game really was against the Denver Nuggets, when he was 2 of 7 and 1 for 5 from deep in 16 minutes. But that was a little bit of a tricky game role-wise, because Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan sat out that game, so it, you know, everything got kind of warped. But it's also worth noting that Paul Pierce had the highest plus-minus on the team against Denver. He was plus 8. Almost everyone else was negative. A couple of guys, J.J. Redick, Bryce Johnson, Allen Anderson, ended up, you know, plus 2 or 3. Everyone else was negative, and a lot of guys were negative by double digits. So Paul Pierce being plus 8 is, you know, I mean, kind of weird, first of all, but maybe that's what inspired Doc. You know, obviously Paul Pierce was going to play in that game with Blake and DJ both resting, and then maybe that inspired Doc to put him back in the rotation, and as long as he's doing okay, he's doing okay. Personally, I'm not really a huge fan of Paul Pierce being in the rotation. Kind of the way that I'm rationalizing it, that I hope is what's going on, is that Doc is realizing that he's going to have to play a 9-man rotation in the playoffs. Here's what the playoff rotation should look like. It should be the same starters, plus the three guards, Felton, Rivers, Crawford, and Mo Spates coming off the bench. And the lineup should be heavily staggered. There probably shouldn't ever be four bench guys and one starter on the floor together. Although I suppose you could get away with those four plus Blake. But there should be a lot of staggering and switching of lineups going on in there. And then you've got Wesley Johnson and Brandon Bass, and to an extent, Allen Anderson, as guys that you can bring in as specialists. If you need, you know, if someone's in foul trouble, like if J.J. Redick is in foul trouble and Jamal Crawford can't guard whoever the other team's shooting guard is, and you need another shooting guard that you can put on the floor besides Austin Rivers, okay, you bring in Allen Anderson and he can play some gritty defense. You know, if Luke Mbamute's in foul trouble and you just need an NBA small forward with NBA small forward length, you can't play a three-guard lineup against whoever you're matched up with, you play Wesley Johnson in those spots. If someone gets in foul trouble and you need an NBA caliber big, you've got Brandon Bass. It's nice to have those guys for depth, even though they aren't in the rotation. And the way that I've kind of rationalized it, and I think that this is, you know, it's probably wrong, it's probably just wishful thinking on my part, but that Doc Rivers knows that this is what the roles are going to be like. And so he's trying to kind of simulate the playoff atmosphere with how he's going to use these players. But he doesn't want to raise Blake Griffin to 40 minutes a game yet because it's still the regular season. So he's bringing Paul Pierce in as kind of like a stopgap to play these minutes, basically to keep Luke and Blake's minutes down. And then when things are, you know, when shit hits the fan, those guys are both going to be able to rest more. I hope that's what's going on, even if it's not particularly likely. So now just moving on from that, kind of checking in a little bit with what's going on around the league. I mentioned in the last episode that there were two games to watch yesterday, Oklahoma City versus Philadelphia and Utah versus New York. Oklahoma City beat Philadelphia by 25, which is kind of the outcome that I think everyone would have expected with Philly visiting Oklahoma City. Now, Utah hosting New York actually didn't have a super strong game. New York led most of the way. It was just like a two-point game in the last 6 minutes, and then Utah kind of pulled away and ended up winning by seven, which, you know, the final outcome is something you'd expect, probably a seven-point win by Utah. The spread might have been right around, like, 8 or 9 points. So, you know, that's how it goes. This is a game you expected Utah to win. The Utah Jazz are now one full game ahead of the Clippers. They have one more win and one less loss, which makes Saturday's game all the more important. And it also makes it kind of important that the Clippers don't drop a game that maybe they should win to a team like Dallas or Sacramento in the coming weeks with that race being so tight. And then behind them, because Oklahoma City won, they stay at 30 wins, just one behind the Clippers. And the Memphis Grizzlies are back there at one game behind the Oklahoma City Thunder at 31 wins. So there's not a lot separating these four teams, going 28, 29, 30, 31 in the loss column, 4, 5, 6, and 7 in the Western Conference. So, you know, the Clippers want to pass the Jazz, but ideally, they don't want the Jazz to fall below fifth. They would like to play the Jazz in the first round. So if the Clippers can get home court versus the Jazz in the first round, that's like double thumbs up. You want to pass Utah to get home court, but you don't want anyone else to pass Utah because they're the team that you want to play. So, it's not as if who we root for in these games really does anything, but I wouldn't root so hard against Utah, because I think the Clippers are going to end up passing them anyway if they play okay, because I think the Clippers should win this head-to-head game on Saturday, and then they'll have the tiebreaker and presumably be tied in the loss column at that point. So I don't want Utah falling all the way down below Oklahoma City, and now the Clippers have to play Russell Westbrook in the first round. And even worse than that, I think, would be having to play the Memphis Grizzlies in the first round, which, you know, you definitely know the Clippers don't want to see them again. So, yeah, the ideal situation is to keep Utah in the five spot, which is uncertainty right now with how close all of these teams are. So that's something just to watch for that I think maybe we haven't considered too closely, is that Utah could actually fall all the way down and we could end up not having a Clippers-Jazz first-round series. Now, as far as tonight's games go, games that matter, the Clippers visiting the Dallas Mavericks is obviously a game that matters for the Clippers because you don't want to lose games. And then Memphis-San Antonio is an important game. If the Grizzlies lose, it would put them 3 losses behind the Clippers and 4 losses behind the Jazz and kind of start to separate, you know, like Oklahoma City would still be up there grappling for the 4-5-6 line, but kind of starts to put separation between that group and Memphis. Now, if Memphis wins and San Antonio loses, it puts San Antonio really on the ropes as far as the one seed is concerned. San Antonio is 2 losses behind the Golden State Warriors right now, but there is a head-to-head game remaining, and San Antonio will have the tiebreaker. So if San Antonio can win the head-to-head game, they'll be one loss away from a tie, and a tie is a win to them. So it's then they're right there. But if they lose this game to Memphis, now you're starting to talk about needing Golden State to, like, go on a slump or rest guys in too many games. And we know both of these teams are probably going to try to rest guys wherever they can down the stretch. So, you know, San Antonio has some tough games on the schedule. Golden State Warriors do too. And it'll be interesting to see who has ulterior motives. You know, if it looks like Memphis is going to finish in seventh, they might be really inclined to go all out to beat San Antonio because they'd rather see San Antonio in the first round than Golden State. They also might not even be thinking about that right now because they're trying to not finish in seventh to begin with. So it's definitely going to be an interesting dynamic watching who throws games against whom in the coming weeks to try to manipulate the seeding process. Now, we are getting to, we're past the 15-minute point of the episode. So there are a couple things I want to talk about as far as these Dallas Mavericks that the Clippers are playing tonight. The Mavericks are currently at 10th place in the conference, and they're maybe, like, the last team that still has a prayer at sneaking into the 8th spot. They've had some losses in recent weeks that haven't really helped that cause. You know, they've had good wins. They won over the Thunder and the Grizzlies, and they've taken care of business against the Nets twice and the Lakers. They had another good win in Washington against the Wizards. But they lost a 2-point game at home to the Suns, who are way out of playoff contention. And then they were drubbed they got destroyed by the Philadelphia 76ers, 116-74. And, you know, that hurts them because there are games like in Toronto and against the Golden State Warriors that they don't really have the firepower to keep up. And if they really wanted to push for the 8 seed, you have to beat teams like Phoenix that you are capable of beating. Right now, the Denver Nuggets have 37 losses. The Dallas Mavericks have 40. I think the Nuggets are definitely going to lose more than 3 more games because I think I talked about how difficult Denver's upcoming schedule is. So if Dallas can kind of keep their lives together in this next week, where they've got a little bit of a tricky schedule of their own coming up. They play the Clippers, Toronto, Oklahoma City, New Orleans, and Memphis. Then, in the last, in their April games, they can try to catch up. But I think it's going to be a tall task. I think Dallas is probably out of it. Which means, I guess I think the most likely team to get the 8th seed right now is Portland. Because Portland is just, you know, they're the team that's there right within striking distance of Denver. And even though I like the Nuggets, I really think that they're going to slip with this difficult closing schedule. I'd still keep my eye on the New Orleans Pelicans. You know, that they've won now 5 of their last 6 games. They just beat the Grizzlies. They beat the Rockets the other night. And they're playing the Rockets again tomorrow. But I believe they still have 3 games left against the Denver Nuggets. I'm checking on this right now. They've got 3 games left against the Denver Nuggets and a game left against the Portland Trailblazers and a game left against the Dallas Mavericks. So for this team, New Orleans, they have the right head-to-heads left to make the impact that they need to make. So they're 4 losses behind the Denver Nuggets, but they've got 3 head-to-heads. If they can win all 3 of those games, you know, winning 3 games in 2 weeks against the same team is a tall task, but it's also an opportunity that, you know, it's pretty rare to have a chance to make up that much ground on a team that you're chasing when you actually control it. So they're 4 losses behind, 3 head-to-heads. They only have to make up 1 more loss. They're 3 losses behind Portland, 1 head-to-head. They have to make up 2 losses. They're 1 loss behind Dallas, 1 head-to-head. There you go. So if they can really catch fire, and like I said, they have won 5 of their last 6, they could go into the playoffs hot. And that would be interesting. So I wouldn't quite rule out New Orleans, even though I know a lot of people kind of are counting them out at this point. I think it's going to be interesting at the very least to see how aggressively they can push to try to get into the 8th seed. But now back to Dallas. The point I'm trying to make with showing that they're like right on the fringe of being written off, but they're still kind of relevant in that 8th seed race, is that they should be desperate. And even though the Clippers have a lot to play for as far as seeding goes and trying to get home court and continuing to build momentum with the good week that they've had, they aren't desperate. They aren't playing for their lives. And Dallas, in a sense, is. I think this is partly the reason why the Clippers lost to the Milwaukee Bucks last week, is that the Milwaukee Bucks, you know, in essence, were playing for their lives, floating right around 500. They're up to six in the East now, but there's a group of teams right there that are all right about above 500. And someone's not going to make the playoffs. You know, more than one team isn't going to make the playoffs. Chicago and Detroit, which are teams that people have thought highly of at points during the season, aren't going to make the playoffs. Charlotte isn't going to make the playoffs. So Milwaukee doesn't want to be, they want to finish ahead of teams like Indiana and Miami. They might even pass Atlanta at the rate they're going. They're only one game behind Atlanta, although anything higher than that is out of reach. But that was a team that was playing for its life. Dallas is a team that's playing for its life. The Clippers, even though they have a lot to play for, just aren't at that level of intensity until the playoffs begin. They can't be. It's just not. There's no amount of they can win games even though the other team is hungrier, but it's hard to be that hungry when you've eaten already. The Clippers have eaten already. They already have their playoff berth locked up. They're just trying to figure out what restaurant they're going to go to. Dallas might get left out in the cold, so they're way more desperate. And then one other note that I just wanted to make on the Mavericks is their rookie, Dorian Finney-Smith, who I don't know if he's in the starting lineup right now for them, but I do know he's been in the rotation all year long. He hasn't been really spectacular, Dorian Finney-Smith, 23-year-old combo forward from Florida, but I really liked him around draft time, and I wanted the Clippers to pick him, but I kind of knew that they wouldn't because he was projected like a mid to late second rounder, and they had that early 30s pick in the second round. And then when they traded down, even 38 and 39, I thought they probably wouldn't take Finney-Smith at 38 or 39, but he actually ended up going undrafted, and so I was like, okay, well now they have to go get this guy because he can, he's a passable three-point shooter and he can defend the wing at an NBA level. He ended up with Dallas, but while his rookie year hasn't been spectacular, I'll read you his stats. It's not like your jaw is going to drop. 4.4 points per game, 2.6 rebounds, 0.8 assists, 0.7 steals, 39.5% from the field, 32.3% from deep. So he's obviously not a non-shooter. 32% from deep it's not like he's a shooter, but he also isn't a non-shooter. He might be able to get up to a respectable mark in the mid-30s as he develops. But he's definitely not a scorer by any stretch of the imagination. But here's why he started 30 games for the Dallas Mavericks and played 20 minutes a game for a Rick Carlisle coach team. He can play defense, and he does play defense. I would have liked for the Clippers to have him, believe it or not, I haven't watched the Dallas Mavericks a lot this season, so I'm actually looking forward to hopefully seeing a chance to, or getting a chance to see him play tonight. Like I said, it's not like I'm saying, oh, this rookie's going to score 20 points, he's not, but just as far as defensively kind of seeing what's real and what's, you know, just the Mavs needing a body and him being the guy that's there, or if he actually looks like he might have some promise. Because he's a guy who, it seems to me, might have, like, Luke Mbamute-level upside. Maybe a little bit of a better shooter early in his career than Luke was, just because of how the game has changed. But as kind of a non-offensive threat, or just barely passable offensively, but really good defensively, combo forward. Because he does have the body and the defensive skills to be that kind of guy. So that's pretty much that. We'll talk more about the map. Oh, and also, I guess keep your eye out for Seth Curry and Yogi Ferrell, who are two young guards that have really kind of exploded onto the scene for the Mavericks this year. Seth Curry, everyone kind of liked last year in Sacramento too, but he's stepped it up to a new level with increased consistency for the Mavs. And then Yogi Ferrell might be one of the better stories of this NBA season, going undrafted, being cut by Brooklyn, being in a couple 10 days, being cut again, going to the D League, and then coming to Dallas and really exploding. And he's now averaging 12 points, 5 assists, and 3 rebounds in 30 minutes a game, shooting 42% from the field and 41% from deep. So that's pretty awesome for a guy to go undrafted, you know, bounce around to the D League, and then come in and find a good spot in a good system and really be able to make an impact. You know, I think that is pretty cool. So I'm happy to see that. I'm looking forward to getting a chance to see those two young guards, as well as Dorian Finney-Smith, who I'd pointed out. So that's going to do it for today's episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. If you have any comments, questions, or feedbacks, feel free to tweet me at LucasJHan or email me lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. Here's the information for the Clips Nation blog. Follow on Twitter at ClipsNationSBN. Read the blog, join the comments at www.clipsnation.com, and follow on Facebook by typing Clips Nation in the Facebook search bar. We'll be back tomorrow with our final episode of the week, again talking about the outcome of tonight's Dallas game and looking at this weekend's Utah game, which is probably the biggest game of the year. And that's it. Thanks for listening, guys. This is Luke Sand signing off for Locked On Clippers.